With What's News, I'm Charlie Turner in New York for The Wall Street Journal. The 2017 tax overhaul that was supposed to help multinational companies has instead dented their profits. We'll get more from The Wall Street Journal's Richard Rubin. First, here are some headlines. British Prime Minister Theresa May has reportedly told members of her Conservative Party that she would resign if her deal for Britain to leave the European Union is endorsed by Parliament. May's Brexit agreement with the European Union late last year has been rejected twice by Parliament. The Prime Minister wants to put it to a third vote this week, but has run up against the Speaker of the House of Commons, John Bercow, who said lawmakers couldn't vote on the exact same deal twice. If May's deal would get passed, she would resign ahead of the next phase of negotiations. UK's Parliament was set to vote on a range of Brexit alternatives in so-called indicative votes, which May's government has been opposing. For the latest on Brexit, head to WSJ.com. The Wall Street Journal says Boeing needed the redesign of its crucial 737 jetliner to go swiftly and smoothly, so it pursued a path that reduced regulatory scrutiny and accommodated its biggest customer by requiring as little training for pilots as possible. Many pilots now say Boeing's choices for the 737 MAX left them in the dark about a new feature whose malfunctioning has been implicated in one deadly crash and is under scrutiny for a possible role in a second, disasters that have claimed 346 lives. Pilots flying the 737 MAX, which entered service in 2017, received no training on a new stall prevention system and saw almost no mention of it in manuals, according to the pilots and industry officials. Most would get no visible cockpit warnings when a sensor used to trigger the system malfunctioned, and they had no access to simulators that could replicate the kinds of problems believed to have downed Lion Air Flight 610 last October. The Journal reports that AT&T's Warner Media is offering buyouts to employees at its Turner unit. This applies to workers who are at least 55 years old and will have 10 or more years of service by year-end. The buyouts at Turner were widely expected as AT&T started to fundamentally reshape Time Warner, the entertainment empire it acquired for more than $80 billion after the last antitrust hurdle was cleared late last month. Still ahead, why tax reform is denting profits of some U.S. companies instead of boosting them. The tax overhaul that Republicans pushed and enacted in 2017 was designed, among other things, to change the international tax system and thus help multinational companies that make much of their profits overseas. It hasn't quite worked out that way, and more than a year later, these multinationals are saying that the new law could hurt their global competitiveness and discourage domestic investment. So what is the flaw in the tax law that has made many of these companies unhappy? Here to answer that is Richard Rubin, U.S. tax policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal, who joins us from Washington. Rich, at the root of this problem seems to be a new minimum tax designed to prevent companies from shifting their profits to low-tax countries. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the idea behind what Congress did in 2017 in international taxes was this. They said, look, if you're a U.S. company and you're making profits abroad, we're not going to impose a U.S. tax on top of that. Companies have been complaining for years that in the previous system that made them uncompetitive in foreign markets because they would compete against companies from other countries that didn't have that second layer of tax on top of whatever they were paying in those markets. But U.S. lawmakers also realized that you can't just say that, because then companies would go stick their profits in places where there's almost no taxes, and it'd be hard for the U.S. to try and claw back any money, and you'd see profits going even more abroad. So they imposed this minimum tax that said, okay, if you pay really low rates, we'll top you up to 10.5%. You'll have to pay some U.S. taxes on top of your foreign taxes. And then if you pay some substantial foreign taxes, sort of a signal that you're operating in real foreign markets with real significant tax rates, then we're not going to – the U.S. is not going to impose that minimum tax on you. But it's that latter group where we've started to see a problem.
Well, the tax has the acronym of GILTI, G-I-L-T-I, Global Intangible Low-Taxed Income. Many multinationals figured they'd avoid paying this tax. Isn't that right?
Yeah, because there was sort of this simplified example in the conference report that Congress put out that said, well, if your foreign tax rate is over 13.125%, then you're going to be fine. But that was a simplified example. And what it masked was what's known as expense allocation. And that basically says that when companies calculate their foreign tax credits, they have to essentially recalculate their foreign taxes for U.S. purposes. And what that means is they have to say, all right, well, some of our domestic income, interest, research, headquarters expenses is really in support of foreign profits. And so we're going to have to allocate those expenses abroad. And then that is going to make your foreign income look smaller, and limit your foreign tax credit. And then so that limits then what companies can use on that foreign tax credit to offset this GILTI tax.
Now, how large is the GILTI tax?
The tax, it really varies by company. Overall, it's going to raise $100-some billion over a decade. For Procter and Gamble, which is one of the companies we talked to, they think this is going to add $100 million to their tax bill. It's going to take their foreign tax rate from 18% roughly to 21%. So it's, that's obviously it's a large company with billions in revenue, but $100 million is still $100 million.
You write that the new tax system could incentivize companies to put jobs, factories, and headquarters outside the U.S. Is this because of rules that Congress did not change in 2017?
Yeah, those are those expense allocation rules.
Yeah.
Because what companies are saying is, well, instead of having to pretend that those U.S. expenses are abroad for foreign tax credit calculations, we could just move them abroad, and then it wouldn't be a problem at all. We could, just count them as foreign expenses, and they wouldn't hurt us nearly as much. And so that's the incentive. We haven't seen companies actually doing that yet, but that's the incentive that companies say exists under this new system.
Rich, could you go over this again? What was the point of GILTI? I thought the goal was to have these companies pay fewer taxes and not more.
The goal of GILTI was as a backstop. It was to say that you can't just make it look like your foreign income is in really low tax places, and then you would just owe a lot less in taxes to the U.S. It was a recognition of what companies, particularly in the technology and pharmaceutical industries, have done, which is to take patents and trademarks and put them in low tax places and say that a lot of their non-U.S. income is earned in places like Bermuda or the Netherlands or Ireland or the Cayman Islands. And so GILTI was designed to basically stop that, to stop those kinds of companies from avoiding all U.S. taxes and foreign taxes as well. So it was a backstop to that system. It's just about who GILTI is affecting that's causing consternation right now.
Well, is there a widespread recognition of this in the government, and are they open to making adjustments, changes?
Yeah, I expect very little on this to happen in Congress. Democrats actually see the opposite problem. They think the way GILTI is structured actually encourages companies to go overseas because it makes overseas earnings really attractive. And so they want to make GILTI more onerous. And Republicans don't. And so we're sort of at a standstill in Congress. The Treasury Department is well aware of these companies' concerns, has already softened the rules a little bit for interest expenses, and is definitely considering further changes as it makes those rules final, and tries to continue implementing the law. This is not a secret to the tax professionals over at the Treasury Department who've been working on this for quite a while.
Wall Street Journal U.S. tax policy reporter Richard Rubin joining us from Washington. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you.
And that's What's News. I'm Charlie Turner in New York at the Wall Street Journal.